You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Here District. It's a fantastic voyage. It is a fantastic voyage, and I am the captain of this vessel, my first mate, my son, Chris Johnson, joining me. And man, the plot thickens and thickens and thickens, and here we are. But first off, what's up, first mate? How you doing? How you living?
I'm okay. I appreciate the enthusiasm.
What's going on with you? You got a nice haircut, shave. You look about... Look, about 25 years old, bro. What you trying to do, man?
We're on the Here District. This is a national audience, and you know, I'm just trying to keep up with you, MJ. You're out here dunking, looking amazing.
Well, what's funny is that how we just on the same wavelength, because a lot of times we wore the same Brandon Jennings 414 Bucks and Six hat when he was on the show. You had yours on backwards, a little cooler than I was. Mine was a little, you know, old school, kind of just basic, but it's all good. And then now, you know, we got the kind of the little bit of the 5 o'clock shadow, We got the close crop here, you know. Look, what else I got? I got to show this off, man. So I got this shirt. All right.
Oh, living in the past. World champions. Looks like a Bucks shirt. I see Giannis on there with some goggles. Okay.
Giannis on there with some goggles. He's eating a 50-piece. Of chicken nuggets, his favorite dish after he dropped the 50 on Phoenix. There's a quote on here that to be honest, I like scoring 50. That's on there, something that he told me in Atlanta a couple of years ago at the, at the Ritz-Carlton in Atlanta, coming down the elevator. Great story, you know. We played New York the night before, and he scored about 17 or 20 or something. And I said something to the effect, Chris, of, man, isn't it nice to know, Giannis, that you don't have to score 50 for us to win every game? And so there was silence. So I thought maybe he was on his, like, ear pods or something. I glanced back. No ear pods. He just kind of looking off, staring off into space. And as we come down to the first floor in the elevator, the door opens. There's a tap on my shoulder. And I turn around, and Giannis says, can I tell you something? And I was like, yeah, big fella, what? What's up? He's like, to be honest, I like scoring 50. You know, and that was that's what he told me. But here's the rest of the story. This is Atlanta. And so we get off the elevator, and as soon as we turn the corner of the elevator to go into the lobby, who greets us in the elevator but Spike Lee? And Spike Lee's got a package in his hands. Wow. And it's the street sign from Do the Right Thing. And he presents that to Giannis because he's such a big fan. And I got all that on Twitter. Maybe I'll repost that. But it was one of the greatest moments, man. Just surreal. But to be honest, I like scoring 50. And so that was just a great moment. But but you know who did this t-shirt?
Who did it? Michael Kors.
You see how professional that looks? He was the star of a show called Baldwin Hills.
Oh, Mariah Johnson.
Young man that you know quite well. You were his agent back in the day, as a matter of fact. You were repping him when he was on that show, Baldwin Hills, on BET. But Mariah actually did this artwork. This is a part of his artwork, and just a beautiful piece of work. And so I got my championship ring on. So I'm just Bucks, just sending all these great vibes, because here we are. The Bucks are down 3-1. And so let's talk first about reality. Game four. You look at the quarter breakdown, and even first quarter, Pacers up 3 at halftime, but still 34-31. The thing that was impressive to me at that point at halftime, the Pacers were scoring at 130 points per 100 possession clip. The Bucks were scoring at 126 points per 100 possessions clip. And that's when no Giannis, no Dame, no Bobby Portis. That's what, like 70 points out of your lineup. Effective field goal percentage about the same, 64-66. I mean, both teams just played really good basketball. And I think coming off that 32-second chance point game 3, the Bucks did a much better job at the half the Pacers had just 2 offensive rebounds. And what did they have the game before that? Like something crazy, 19 offensive rebounds, something crazy, 32 second chance points, the most since forever. In a playoff game. So they did, so at halftime they did what they had to do. Now the third quarter was their undoing. Started to run out of gas a little bit. And the Patriots held them to 21, outscored the Bucks by 10, 31-21, and then went on to win the game. But even though the fourth quarter was even, they still had that enough of a 13-point cushion to hold on and win this thing by 13. But let's talk about Bobby Portis, first of all. And Andrew Nimrod, like I like to call him, and Andrew Nimhard, they get into it. What was that about? Yeah. What did Bobby play? About 5 minutes? And that was like seven minutes into the game.
He played 4 minutes.
Seven minutes into the game, they get into it. And get tangled up. Nimhard, you know, to his credit, smaller guy, 6'3", 190. Bobby, 6'10", 265. And Nimhard didn't back down. He gave him, you know, he gave him the shove.
Right.
Bobby gave him the shove back. And here's where it gets dicey. Nimhard, after getting shoved back by Bobby, he actually advanced. He came forward. Dukes up, came forward.
Okay.
And Bobby tagged him with a left, you know, coward, tried to tag him. I'm not sure if it made contact or not. And so that led to his ejection. Go ahead.
As a rehabilitated hothead that has seen his fair share of conflict. Okay, listen. Sweetwater in that situation has got to keep his cool, man. He's too valuable to the Bucks to be out there slapping dudes in a must-win game, must-win situation. MJ, I know what you're going to say. This isn't the time to be the enforcer. This is the time to be the cooler-headed Portis, not the one that knocked out Mirotic, but the one that says, hey, I'm going to keep my cool. I'm not slapping dudes, because now we don't know if Bobby's going to be suspended for the next game. Now you put us in an uphill battle for the whole game, Bobby Portis.
Well, so you prefaced your comment by saying, as a recovering or reformed hothead.
Rehabilitated
hothead. So I've watched you through the years as your father coaching you and watching you through from 12, 13 through high school, through college. Didn't see a whole lot of you play overseas, obviously, because you were bouncing all around the globe, led the world in scoring. And where were you? In Riyadi? Where was that where you led the world in scoring? Lebanon?
Bunch of places. Rayyan,
36 a game, whatever. Put yourself in Bobby's shoes before the rehabilitation and reformation takes place. I mean, you think you could have shown some restraint, guys coming at you. And even though there's a lot on the line, my point is, it's just human nature. It's tough here's my point. We have christened Bobby Portis as our enforcer. He's our tough guy. He's our Maurice Lucas. He's our Lustikoff, whatever his name was with the boss. He's our guy that we rely. He's our Ken the Animal Bannister. You remember him?
He had another face going out of his face.
He had like two faces, one face going out of another face.
But Ken here's the deal.
Bannister. You know,
but here's the deal.
Okay, go ahead.
But
Better World Peace. Well, I just saw
it at
Cool Side in Indiana. Better World Peace.
Okay. I get it all. I love Meta. I love all the guys you name. But guess what? This isn't that time. So this isn't the time where enforcers actually get to flourish in the NBA. That type of basketball, those type of actions, there's no place for it. So you can't punch dudes. You can't slap dudes. It's got to be the stuff, sneaky elbows on the court, you know, hard screens, a lot of talking and woofing. But once you cross over into putting your hands on folks, Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, once you cross over into that realm of I have assaulted you, now we got a major problem, because not only do you jeopardize yourself, but now you're giving us an uphill battle. Now we got a shorter rotation. Guys got to step up. And our best guy, our best scorer, basically our best 6'10", you know, versatile scoring type threat, which would have been essential in a game like this with Miles Turner dropping 29, you're out in the first quarter. Come on, Sweetwater, be better.
Well, you know, and I'm not condoning what happened. All I'm saying is that we have, you know, endorsed Bobby as our tough guy. Now, all of a sudden, we're expecting him to show some restraint and be this guy that he is not. He's not Bobby Portis. like I was talking about with you in terms of your rehabilitated hothead. He's not Bobby Portis if he does respond in that situation. Bobby could not.
You gotta slap him. You gotta slap a dude. You have to lay hands on face.
But think about something. He showed restraint. He could have knocked him out. He could have put the fist to his head and knocked him out and been done.
Now, been done for months. But we're not living in that world, MJ. He also could have strangled him. He also could have strangled him.
But look at the video. He pawed at him with that left. He gave a pawed left, open-handed left, kind of pawed at him. And that's because Nimhart's coming forward. So hopefully Joe Dumars will take all of that into account. You know, I'm kind of expecting Bobby Portis to get suspended again. But you know what saved him was the fact that James Capers, when he made the announcement of the ejection, he said a slap. Portis tries a slap or throws a slap. I forgot how he phrased it, but the way he phrased it seems to leave it a little open-ended in terms of giving Joe Dumars and the people in the league office just a little bit of a play with the situation where they maybe don't have to suspend it, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, they missed it. They missed him a lot. I mean, last thing, it's just like you're already down. You're already shorthanded. It's like those are the moments that you got to stay on the floor, but that's neither here nor there. What did you think about how folks stepped up in the absence of, you know, Portis, Lillard, and Giannis? Like, how did you think everybody else stepped up and played?
Well, I mean, I was remarkably pleased with a couple of things. Brook Lopez and his dominance inside, going back to, I call him, you know, New Jersey Turnpike Brook. You know, he went back to Turnpike Brook on him, you know, just down like the old New Jersey Net Brook before he started shooting threes with the Lakers.
For sure.
Got perimeter already. He was Turnpike Brook. You know, he went back Turnpike mode on him. I love that 27 points, 8. You know, you were somebody complaining about maybe it was a private discussion we were having.
It was me. One rebound, game one.
The dearthness in rebounding.
It was me.
But what do you have? 8, 9 rebounds?
Nine. He had 9. 27 and 9, baby.
27 and 9 for that game. So that was to me, and I told his mom, Deb, after the game. She was in Indianapolis, and I made sure to tell her that he played great. You know, he played great. Chris Middleton, I didn't know what he would have after the 42 points and 41-minute overtime performance, a masterful performance in game 3. He comes back out. I didn't know what he was going to bring, Chris, because Chris is at that age where that could have taken so much out of him that he just had absolutely nothing left. He came up with 25 and 10 rebounds plus 5 assists. Now, he did have the 4 turnovers. And I know you, and that probably bugged you. But I said it on the air, those were fatigue-based turnovers more than anything else. You know, they're a little lackadaisical, a little relaxed on the passing. But to me, that's just – I mean, you know, this guy's just worn down at this stage of the season, but he was given buckets. He was given, you know, his protege, Aaron Nesmith. They went to the same high school, Port of God, Charleston, South Carolina, 8 years apart. Chris is the mentor. Yeah. Nesmith is the mentee. So it's almost like the old Kung Fu movies with David Carradine, the Kung Fu television show with David Carradine and how he had to snatch the pebble out of the hand of the master before he was ready to go out into the world. And so Nesmith ain't ready yet. He didn't snatch that pebble out of Chris's hand in that game, even though Nesmith, I love his game. You know, he's the kind of guy, those are the kinds of guys on the margins that the Bucks could use quite as kept, like those young athletic type wings like that. But
right, but they got to play. Yeah, go ahead, MJ.
I digress. But listen, Malik Beasley. That's what I want to talk about, man. Malik Beasley.
Aggressive.
Malik Beasley. And his first shot, he missed it, but he didn't settle for a three. Left corner, 3-point line, caught it. Little show, put it on the floor, baseline floater, kind of rattled in and out. But that got him started. Next shot fake, 2 dribbles left, wing jumper, bucket.
It seemed like somebody got in his ear about being aggressive offensively, about looking for a shot taken, because he got a shot blocked, won one possession, came right back. I think the Bucks kept it. Then he got it right back, took another shot. So he had that sort of, I'm getting up my shot. Somebody, Doc, maybe told him, hey, we can't win this game unless you give us a dub.
Well, and so we can talk Bobby Portis's absence all we want, but man, if you're going to give a team a 51% 3-point makes, God, you just, I mean, And I'm not sure if it
but
was
him,
just, terrible defense, or just the Pacers were just on one playing at home and just feeling themselves, man. 51%.
Well, you know, the Pacers have been shot makers.
Yeah, all
this
season.
Entire series. I mean, this season, but particularly this season. Every time the Bucks go on a run, every time the Bucks are kind of challenging, dudes are knocking down jumpers all net off of two swings, whether it be Halliburton, Shepherd, all them dudes, right? But my thing was this. You had two dudes in Halliburton and Turner that went on personal, like, 9-0 runs each. Like really just giving it to the Bucks, shot after shot after shot. My thing, and one of them, I think it was Turner that had it at the end of the third quarter going into the fourth that kind of helped stretch that lead. But my thing is like, man, where are the days, speaking of old school, speaking of enforcer things, like, how are you going to take a guy like that out of his rhythm? You're just going to let Halliburton keep getting off 9-0, nine straight points, Miles Turner, like, dude, that to me was the issue, because if you could at least slow those two type of runs down, man, we would have had a much better chance in bringing the lead closer. We couldn't get over that doggone 5-point hump, it seemed like.
Well, I tell you, the thing that bothered me even more so than – and Miles Turner was – I mean, he threw down that dunk where he didn't even hit the rim. I mean, he just kind of threw it down over Brook Lopez. I mean, he made some really spectacular plays. But the guy that bugged me, the nemesis – huh?
Nemesis
for the game. Nimrod. I mean, he took – he went right off a high ball screen three straight possessions. Layup uncontested, uncontested, and then he just bogarted Malik Beasley on the next one, bump, powered through, finished through him. No foul. It was just contact. I mean, three straight times. I mean, once okay, twice okay, next time, no, you're not getting right. We're forcing you back. So that's the part that bugged me. He just, you know, just for a stretch, three straight layups going right off a high ball. And to Rick Carlisle's credit, old school, hey, until they stop it, we stand with it. We stand
absolutely
with it.
Absolutely. And the Bucks didn't stop it. And they went to the same stuff. Obi Toppin, too, his energy was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean,
he's out there just outrunning everybody out quick, and he's making Doc have to sub in people, try, tinker with different lineups. Like, I appreciate Gallinari and how he came in the game and was a pro and gave the Bucks a little something. But the glaring issue was definitely on the defensive side. So for me, Em, it's like, I see Crowder had 12 minutes. I see, you know, you're playing Connington a big 22-minute type of stretch during the game. That's got, for me personally, when you're looking at Andre Jackson and the production he's doing in his minutes, and then A.J. Green, how solid he is. It's like, you got to think about shifting your strategy a little bit geared towards a younger crew.
Time out. Before we get into Ajax, Andre Jackson Jr., I just something. I had a flashback. USC, UCLA, on the road. You hit like seven shots in a row. SC calls a timeout. Charles O'Bannon says in the huddle to Jim Herrick, the UCLA coach, about how many shots that you're getting. And you're not missing seven in a row. And Charles O'Bannon says, well, when is somebody else going to get to take a shot? And Coach Herrick says, when Johnson misses. And that was kind of Rick Carlisle's mindset with Nembhard. You know, like, we're going to run this thing until they stop it. And until you stop that. I love that kind of coaching. You know what I mean? It's that old school. If they don't stop it, we ran it like four times in a row. We stopped it. We didn't stop it three. The fourth time, Chris Middleton switched early on him and turned him away on the baseline. But Rick Carlisle was going to run until you stop it. To your point, we've got a stopper, Papa Stopper, like your grandfather, Paul, my dad, Jeff Johnson used to call me. Wake up, Papa Stopper. Get out there, Papa Stopper. Turn it out, Papa Stopper. Let's go. Let's get some buckets.
Papa Stopper.
We got Andre Jackson Jr. You know, and if there was any question as to whether or not this young man out of upstate New York, got to look it up, either Albany or Buffalo, I forget which one, but upstate New York, you know, UConn national champion, Danny Hurley says it's the best player he's ever coached, been around, you know, and he averaged, what, 8-9 points a game, and, you know, it didn't even score double figures, and they win a national championship. He is showing, Chris, that he is a key. What was he, a +9 yesterday? I think a +10 in game three.
Right.
I mean, so you can you know, you can argue about the value of plus minus, that's that all you want, and the situational and who's on the floor with you and all that. +9 and +10. He's making positive stuff happen. Yep.
I argue at the value of my eye test and what I'm looking at Andre Jackson do and what he the effect he's having on the game. That length defensively, allowing him to be not only defend perimeters, but give guys trouble down low, especially in a game like yesterday, then getting the steals. But him as a creator is where I would love just to see him get more opportunity. I feel like he's got a lot more. He's got a lot more off the bounce. You know, he's still trying to get comfortable playing, you know, he's thrust into a role, probably the most minutes he played, I don't know in how long, but, you know, in a meaningful game, 25 minutes in the playoffs, and you go 6-7, three rebounds, you know, three steals, a block, and you're knocking down two threes and getting into it, tripping dudes when they're on dribble penetration, getting into the fray, causing drama. He's locked into the playoffs. So I feel like a guy like that deserves more minutes. He's earned it. 3-1. Now, we can talk about whatever we want, but we're talking about this stuff like the Bucks have forever. So this do or die. What's it like, or what are your thoughts on this 3-1 with Milwaukee, man?
Well, again, it all hinges on the availability of Debo. So when I say Debo, the Friday movies, Tiny Lister, you know, it's like you get bullied on the playground, and then you go get your big brother, and it's Debo to come back and take up your cause for you, and your opposition is just like, you know, you soiling your pants as you approach.
Oh wow!
You know, and so that's because look, I mean, the Bucks have played this team overtime game. They played them close for the most part until that bad stretch at the end of the third quarter, going into the fourth. You know, they played them close enough to realize that. With the Giannis, with the Dame probably not going to happen. But Giannis, you know, we don't know. They say there's a possibility. I don't have any inside scoop or anything like that, no inside information. But if he is available, okay, that's one thing. But 3-1. So I was in a 3-1 situation, down 3-1 against the Denver Nuggets as a rookie. Down 3-1, I think game five, I dropped like 35 and 16 rebounds against the Nuggets for six games.
Who is starting?
Bobby Jones, Hall of Famer Bobby Jones. I'm a rookie.
You know, I got to know who's guarding.
Hall of Famer Bobby Jones. Defensive stopper Bobby Jones.
He didn't want to see me.
But here's the funny thing about that series. Bobby Jones was forcing me left the first game or two. And I wasn't a right dominant player so much, but I like going right. But he forced me left, and it kind of messed with my head a bit. He wouldn't let me get to my right hand. And so in between games, Chris, and this is how we do it, you know, talked about your grandfather, but, you know, this work, Johnson work ethic. I worked on this left hand, like, before practice, after practice, during practice. Had guys on my team, Alex and these other guys, kind of, man, shape me to the left every possession. You know, I'm working on. And I got real comfortable quickly. In a span of 2 or 3 days, I got real comfortable going left. And then if you look at the video of the big games I had against Denver and Bobby Jones, it's all going left. You know, pull-up jumper, getting left, little fadeaway. You know, it's finishing left.
So, but that's not normal. You know, everybody can't just do that. Can't just work on it and then do it against Bobby Jones in the doggone playoff.
Of course they can. Of course it's not normal. That's what we're doing. That's what we're talking about. But we're talking about 3-1 in the bigger picture. It's like I digress to talk about that individual matchup because it was a great matchup. It was kind of my coming out party against the Denver Nuggets. Beat them at home. They went down to in Denver and won a crucial game, you know, five or something. Beat them at home game six and then game seven back in Denver. You know, and that was the thing that bugged me back in those days because as good of a series as I was having, I should have been the featured performer, but we were kind of into this
Who was featured?
We got Brian Winters, we got Junior Bridgman. You know, we got a lot of really good scores on that team.
Yeah.
And I was a rookie, but I had a couple 30-plus point games, man. I had a great series. But we wound up losing game seven. But the point is being down 3-1. Look, this is my point. 3-1. Everybody talks about all you got to do is win one. Just focus on the next game. Trust me, I adhere to that philosophy. But I also feel like, Chris, I mean, in terms of just positive visualization, I want our guys thinking about strolling down the streets of New York City, getting ready to play the Knicks in the next round. Knicks are up 3-1 on the Sixers, assuming they put them away. I want visualization about not only success against these Pacers, but let's project yourself into the next round and the round after that. And this is our year, and this is what's going to happen. And we're not going to let this momentary setback you know, deter us from achieving our dream. It's much like championship year. You're down 0-2 to the Nets. You're not supposed to win that. You're down 0-2 in the finals against the Suns. You're not supposed to win that. Man, you've been there. You've got experience of coming back from deficits like this. Call upon that and project yourself a little further out than just the next game. I know, take it one at a time and all that bull crap. Man, forget about that. You know, this team is beatable, and you've got to approach it as such. So that's just my take on that kind of thing, man.
But who on the Bucks are you asking to do this? Who are you asking this from? Who do you project is going to step up, rise to the occasion? Does Middleton have another 42-point performance? Does Brooke have another 27-9 in him? And is Pat Bev? What was going on with Pat Bev yesterday? He was out for.
He took a fall. He took a fall, banged up his hip pretty bad. Yeah, he banged up
Pat
his hip.
But Pat Bev. I mean, like, yeah. M, what do you, I mean, who do you feel like is going to have it working and is poised to kind of put the team on his back, man, and take us and try to even the series up?
Well, look, let's keep it real, man. If we don't have, if Giannis is unavailable, if Dame is unavailable, if Bobby gets suspended, you know, you may be able to ride the crest of emotion and energy if I serve to win a game.
A game.
You may. Absolutely. You may not. You know, the way Indiana's playing right now, that's not a given. They're playing spectacular. And as you talked about, it's the Obi Toppins. It's the Ben Shepherds. It's the dudes that we've never heard. Ben Shepherd from Belmont, a Belmont Bruin out there balling. 30% shooter for the regular season, 40% going into the game last night. What did he shoot last night? Ben Shepherd, 2-for-2 from the three-point line. So now he is 6-for-12. He's up to 50% from the three-point. You know, these dudes are having their way with us. And so we need Debo. If Debo's not available, you know, it's going to be tough, man. Let's keep it real. Let's keep it 100. It's going to be tough to beat this team, the Pacers, the way they're playing now. Like I said, you know, I thought the first half we played great, 126 points per 100 possession. They had 130. I knew we couldn't sustain. I knew they could sustain theirs. My question is whether or not we could sustain our offensive productivity, and we couldn't. And that's what led to the disparity in that third quarter, led to the victory. So without Giannis, without Dame, without Bobby in a game on a Tuesday night, a game five on a Tuesday night at home, you know, the Pacers would have to come out awful complacent and awful flat. You know, we have to play at another level.
I also don't think the Pacers have that killer in them. As you've seen this, I'm gonna be real. Like they don't. Like they're not putting the Bucks away. They're not closing dudes out. It's still a close game. The Bucks are still within four or five possessions. You know, a couple threes from making things interesting. So my thing is, they're not gonna come out with that, and they're gonna allow the Bucks a chance to win the next game for sure. Bucks, I think the Bucks are gonna steal the next. The next two if I serve, right?
Wow.
I think they'll steal the next. Is it one and one? Or how is it?
One's at five serve, game five being five back, serve, then game six will be back at Gainbridge Arena in Indianapolis, which, you know.
Well, game five for sure. Game five for sure, 100%. And it'll be interesting to see what happens after game five, where the Pacers are, where the Bucks are. Because game six is, I mean, but we got to think about game five. So I'm going with the Bucks game five, no doubt. No, 100%. I'm not rolling with the Pacers, man. Yeah. Not at all. They barely beat them.
I'm projecting myself in Central Park, kind of chilling, you know, waiting for this Knicks series to start. And, you know, I'm just chilling, eating a hot dog from the corner hot dog dude. They're just, you know, going by Star Deli, get me a big pastrami sandwich. I'm in New York, man. I'm getting ready to go get Jalen Brunson, man. Getting ready to be the guy. Getting ready to hang out. Ray Clyde, Frazier, the crew. Yeah, no, but halfway adjust. But I agree with you. I mean, and Bobby Portis, speaking of Bobby, I mean, Bobby had a great comment about the Pacers after game two when they beat the Bucks in Milwaukee, where he said they were front runners. They're front runners, bro. When things are going great, they chirp it. They talk it. When things ain't going great, you don't hear a peep out of them. So that's the kind of mindset that you've got to project onto them by how you play them, the aggressiveness, the physicality you bring to the table, and then the shot making. If we make shots, what did we shoot last night? We shot 51% from the field and 36% solid from the three-point line. Those are good enough numbers to win. You can't win if you're giving up 52% and 51%. That's the issue. But we're playing well enough right now offensively to win and beat this Pacer team. It's all about our defense. And to your point, Andre Jackson Jr., I think he has proven himself worthy of 20 plus minutes or whatever Doc has in mind for him. But he is such a valuable asset. He's shown he's an asset, right? I mean, he's an asset when he's on the floor. He is an asset when he's on the floor. And I just love to see him continue to get minutes and continue to be productive. And we'll see how that pans out. But it's why it's called a Fantastic Voyage, right?
Last thing on Jackson, it's imperative he plays a lot of minutes because he's the dude that can get back and scramble in transition situations, which kills the Bucks and which leads to spot ups. Right. He's the dude that can close out and get back and play two men and you know, maybe get a deflection and stop and break up that that seamless transition game. They got 22 transition breaks, you know, went 1.2 points per possession or more. Per possession off of 22, you know, spot ups galore, you know, that equals the spot. And it's all about this, the triggering of the spot up swinging. Like that's what we need to be able to get back and stop ball. And so Jackson, to me, presents that for the Bucks.
Well, and stop ball, one of the big triggers for the Pacers in their outside game is, you know, Haliburton getting into the paint. You know, when they get a piece of the paint with Haliburton, with Nimhard, whatever his name is. No, it's Nimhard. I know. I love Andrew Nimhard. Whoever it is, when they get into the paint, they cause, I mean, even Siakam is able to get in there and reverse pivot and kick out. And then Miles Turner, you know, because he knows Brook is going to, you know, sag deep into the paint to help. That's just who Brook is. Miles Turner's been picking us apart with that jump shot. So, but it's about the point of attack. And I agree with you, Andre Jackson Jr., to me, is the guy. I mean, I would have had him on Haliburton at the end of game three, you know, when they, you know, they put him in the backcourt. Brilliant play by Rick Carlisle just to give him a runway. 6.7 seconds left, you know, game tied, give him a runway. And it was just a tough situation to put Pat Bev in. So anyway, but that's why, I mean, it's a fantastic voyage. That's why we play the game. It's been a real interesting ride. And this 3-1 thing, you know, look, don't get caught up in it. If you're out there, don't think it's so insurmountable. A lot of teams have overcome 3-1, starting with the Celtics in 68, the Lakers in 1970, the Bullets in 1979, the Celtics again in 81, the Rockets in 95. And we talk about Doc Rivers. He's had at least two situations where his Clipper teams have blown 3-1 leads. So if anybody knows about the psychology of 3-1 leads from the other side, which is a valuable piece of knowledge to have, is Doc Rivers. So we'll see how he plays this, how this team plays this, and got to get him in game five. Got to get him in game five. But it's a fantastic voyage. All right, man. Look, this has been great basketball conversation. I'm the captain of this vessel. This is the first mate, Chris Johnson. And, man, you know, you got me all geeked up, fired up, man. I can't wait for Tuesday night and what's going to happen. You know, the unknown factor. You know, either I'm packing for Indianapolis to leave Wednesday, or I'm packing for Los Angeles for the summer. You know, it's just so many, it's so many great unknowns, but that's why we call it a fantastic voyage. Thank you, First Mate, for joining me on the Here District, man. I'll see you again. We're going to circle back soon because hopefully this thing is going to be extended and turn out to be one of those kind of iconic series between the Pacers and the Bucks. Who knew? Old school, Chris Johnson, the Here District. Fantastic voyage. We'll see you next time.